From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for December 16th, 2022. Checking the calendar, the Bucks are home Saturday night with the Jazz and then hit the road and won't be back in town until late in the month. The Packers are home for a Monday night game with the Rams, and today is National Ugly Christmas Sweater Day. Some people here in the office have really leaned into it. And for the last-minute shoppers, our Christmas shopping tip of the week is Quick Trip. Windshield washer fluid and motor oil make great last-minute gifts, and they have donuts. Okay, there's now a labor pain simulator. Guys can show and share the experience of labor pains with their wives and or girlfriends. Honestly, if guys were the ones that were having babies, there wouldn't be any humans left on the planet. Pay close attention to this next one. DNA showed a mother is also her daughter's uncle. You heard that right. A mother was also her daughter's uncle. Scientists have solved the DNA medical mystery, and they say it's more common than we think. Trust me, you should Google this, because if I tried to explain it, we'd be here till next Friday. A 72-year-old German woman was being detained on suspicion of attempted manslaughter. The woman allegedly turned off her roommate's ventilator because the sound annoyed her. Wow, an intolerant German, imagine that. Yes, those are my people. Stop the presses. Jell-O, J-E-L-L-O, is no longer America's favorite dessert. I don't have all the details, but it must be Bill Cosby's fault. And finally, in Florida, not too smart Floridian tried to shoplift from a Walmart during their annual Shop with a Cop night. On the podcast today, we have Art Rothschild, Kendall Bauer, the new kid, Bob Landis, and getting us started with a look back at the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, as always, Max, more questions than answers following your intro here. I think a rough week overall for stocks. The NASDAQ down 2.7%, closing today at 10,705. The S&P down 82 points, closing at the bell at 3852, down 2.1% for the week. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 1.7% this week after losing 282 points Friday. Quick look at the week for the year. NASDAQ down 31%. It's been a rough year for those more growth-oriented, more tech-oriented stocks. The S&P 500 down 17.9, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 7.5. You know, Bob, I think the outset here, looking at this return disparity between the NASDAQ and the Dow Jones, we've seen a year like this occasionally, but you got to go all the way back to 2000 to see the return disparity we're seeing between the NASDAQ and the Dow, similar disparity between growth and value stocks right now, and it's all a symptom of the same problem.
You know, it all boils down to mathematics. As you know, Kyle, bear markets are an exercise in math. As you are well aware, interest rates drive stock valuations. You're going to try to value a company. You look as far into the future as possible to predict future cash flow. Then you have to discount that to a present value, typically using the yield on the 10-year treasury. Here's the point of the story. The yield on the 10-year has gone from 1.5% to roughly 3.5%. So you're discounting future cash by a bigger number, resulting in a lower present value. But here's why I bring this up relative to your question. Growth stocks gush cash, very high cash levels compared to the more moderate to modest cash flows of insurance companies, banks, utilities, others that dominate the value sector. So the higher your cash flow, the bigger the hit you took. And it's, again, the present value of future cash. The higher your cash flow, the lower the present value. So you look at the growth stocks. You know, they've been hit pretty good. There are more growth stocks, of course, on the NASDAQ than the 30 Dow Industrials. So they don't have a lot of growth there. So they've held up better. But, Kyle, you know, if you look at the last 10 years, you're the one that told me this, that, you know, growth has beaten the pants off of value even through this bear market. You and I have remarked for years about 30-year look-backs that we've done, and it was just, you know, a handful of years ago that value fell out of the 30-year top rankings. Consistently, every year for a 30-year look-back, we'd always do those, and value made more than growth, and that's not the case anymore. And, you know, Art, I'm reminded of a conversation that you had with a fund manager a while back where you asked the guy, hey, if Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Netflix is 25% of the value of the S&P, what do you think it's going to be 10 years from now? And the guy said, maybe half of the value of the market. It just gives you an idea of how growth are buying up the competition, the regulators, you know, calling to Washington, slap them around a little bit, and then send them home, and they don't do anything. So it's just, you know, Kyle, we talk about dispersion, the difference in percentage terms between various asset classes. Normally, in the average year, it's 11%. It's not even close this year. You know, the NASDAQ compared to the S&P, you're 23 basis points. It's a lot.
Yeah, and I think the reminder, of course, is that just because growth stocks are the thing that's gotten beat up this year, doesn't change the fundamental outlook for a lot of these businesses. It doesn't change our expectations for kind of future returns. It just changes, you know, Bob, as you rightfully point out, it changes what we're willing to pay for those returns today. And so if you start to extrapolate out the potential for earnings growth, and most importantly, you start to get a clearer understanding of where interest rates are headed, I think it becomes easier to value those growth names, and maybe the area of the market you've been trying to avoid this year becomes an area that's got some potential return as we look ahead. Of course, Art, we got news from the Federal Reserve this week that they raised interest rates another 50 basis points. It seems like potentially the market had a somewhat negative response. I think you can't strictly tie it to the Fed, but a lot going on there.
Yeah, it's definitely related. Early in the week, we got good news. So in the past, good news has been bad news. Bad news has been good news. This week, good news was good news. So investors bought in anticipation that the Fed was going to do exactly what they ended up doing. So stocks went up early in the week in anticipation of the Fed doing what they were expected to do. They then did what was expected to be done. They raised interest rates 0.5%. They indicated what they'd already indicated, which was that the path is going to be longer than the market would like to see. They're going to keep interest rates slightly higher for slightly longer. And then all of a sudden on Thursday, I believe it was, we got news that consumer spending was down and manufacturing was down. So now we had bad news. So that bad news was taken badly by the market. So the markets now are more concerned about a potential recession than they are about fighting inflation. I think the Fed's got a handle on that. So the Fed did exactly what we would have expected them to do. The market, quite frankly, reacted very poorly because they should have known. And the Fed's going to be vigilant, but they're turning their attention now to the weakening economy, and that's frustrating.
Yeah, I think the challenge that Jerome Powell and the Fed faces is that they've got to keep up appearances right now. They've got to prove to the market that they're going to do what it takes to win this war. And you can't give the illusion of the war being over when it feels like you're still in the middle of it. And so while they're saying, yeah, next year we might make it another 75 basis points, maybe 25 at a time, you know, the market doesn't quite anticipate it's going to have to go that far. You look at the FedWatch tool from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, they see a little bit less than what the Fed is talking about. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that as much as anything, what the Fed is doing right now is window dressing. And so, you know, if you can give this perception that you're going to win the war, it might be enough to win the war. And of course, Kendall, no shortage of issues that the Fed has caused, no shortage of other challenges out there this year, and yet maybe some reasons for optimism.
Yeah, one of the conversations I've been having with clients is it's been a rough year, no way around it. But if we look at some of the things that have taken place and where we are, I think it could be much worse. I have a quick list of some of the major events we've seen. So some of the highest inflation we've seen in decades. Point this summer where we had double-digit losses in stocks and bonds. We've seen interest rates raised at a historic pace, mortgage rates double, conflict in Ukraine. We saw record-high gas prices, which are now back to, I think, lower than where we started the year. And then more recently, we've had, you know, the blow up in the crypto market. So all this being said, the fact that we're sitting here down on the S&P roughly 18%, the U.S. bond ag index roughly 10, when both of which were down 25 and 17 earlier this year, I think it could be worse. I think there's things to be optimistic about. The big one, obviously, being the Fed getting to a point where if inflation continues to head down, they may be able to take the foot off the gas in the spring and be able to pivot if economic news comes out and the economy continues to weaken to rate cuts. And if that happens, I think that's one of the many things that could potentially kick stocks off on a rally.
I think the optimism is key. It's always couched in kind of the caution that we so often quote. And the good news there is the more cautious piece of our portfolio, the bond component, now has some cushion it didn't have before. You're actually getting paid to hold fixed income. You're actually getting paid to sit in areas of the market that are less volatile. And so, yeah, down 17 at one point this year on the aggregate bond index is a pretty big number. It's not down as much as stocks were. And more importantly, as we look ahead, as the rate of interest rate increases now has slowed, as the Fed seems to have put a bit of a cap on how high rates can go here, at least based on kind of the current talking, I think that to me signals this kind of this idea that as we get into the middle part of next year, all of a sudden bonds offer a far more attractive source of returns, far less risk than what we've seen this year, far less volatility than what we've seen here. And so pretty excited about kind of how that shapes up. And it allows us to buy some time for some of those issues that are out there to settle out. You know, Bob, I think one of the things that I've had a number of conversations in meetings with you this week, just looking at money market interest rates and how far they've come along with bond yields. A reminder that a large number of money markets out there are investing in treasury securities, usually a year or less treasury securities. And as a result, as the Federal Reserve has raised interest rates, the interest rates on those money markets have tended to follow suit. Some of the ones we follow most closely, you know, within a day or two of the Federal Reserve raising interest rates, we see those higher yields come across. And I know you've pointed out to clients this week, hey, pay attention to those interest rates. There's some opportunity there.
Well, good news, bad news. Good news is on balances over 100,000, the money funds pay 4% or more, and they're going to keep climbing as the Fed raises the overnight rates. But let's back this up just a minute. You talk about the Fed. I worry that the Fed's going to over-tighten. I worry that they got it wrong in the early innings. Last November, they publicly said, no, we're not going to raise rates. We think inflation is transitory. I'm sure they deeply regret having said that. And less than 60 days later, they throw in the towel and start raising rates and prepare the street for very large rate increases. The Fed gets it wrong a lot, and I don't know that enough investors understand that. The Fed is charged with two mandates, price stability and full employment. So here's the problem. In the old days, we used to define full employment at 5% unemployment. For decades, this country thought that if unemployment fell much below 5, inflation would take off. Alan Greenspan proved that wrong in the late 90s as unemployment fell way below 5% without triggering inflation. So I worry about the Fed over-tightening. But if you look at the trends now, I agree with Kendall. Things are encouraging. For starters, we're not talking about whether inflation's going to come down or not. It's happening. I mean, we're all just talking about how long is it going to take for the Fed to get comfortable and stop raising rates. But we're not arguing about whether inflation is going to come down or not. So that's clearly good news. Secondly, when you look at earnings for next year, and Kyle, I've been at this so long that it's just a matter of time before they revise lower the estimates for next year, particularly we get into the guidance season for earnings later in January. I think you'll see a lot of people take the erasers out. But, recently FactSet still thinks it's going to be north of 7% for earnings for next year. And the question that I get constantly is, are we going to be in a recession? And I think that's academic. You're not investing in the economy when you buy stocks. And it's so important for people to remember that. I don't think in the 47 years that I've been doing this that I never have been at a point where I don't worry about recessions. I mean, recessions can occur for all sorts of reasons. The market crash in 87, there's one example. Y2K, there's another example. 9/11, here's a third example where, you know, the fundamentals were actually fairly good going into those events. But I think the key is the retail spending report that came out the other day, a little bit disappointing, but it didn't fall apart. And with so many people working in this country, and unfortunately a lot of people don't save money, so to be out there to shop, you got to be working. And overall, the retail numbers look fairly good. So, you know, where I'm going with this point is, I agree. I think the Fed will be done raising rates maybe late in the spring. We go through a period of time where we retest the lows. And, you know, maybe early in 2024, the Fed starts easing, and then the party starts all over again.
And I think what I appreciate about those comments, Bob, is that, you know, we talk a lot about current conditions. You can see it in the retail sales numbers, down 0.6% in November over the October number. On a year-over-year basis, still look like a pretty decent number, up 6.5%. And so a lot of this is what we're comparing it to, and we're coming through a period in time in which, you know, you look at some of the manufacturing data, it's clear that the economy has slowed. You look at some of the service sector data, it's clear that the economy has slowed. And so as we talk about the expectations for especially the second half of next year, well, the comparison points are a lot easier than they were. You look at the earnings numbers, and if not for energy names this last couple of quarters, we'd be in an earnings recession right now. And so as you look next year this time, you're comparing against numbers that were largely flat on a year-over-year basis. The comparisons get that much easier. And so most important, I think, to remember that of the things that look ahead, stocks are one of those critical leading indicators. Stock market's not concerned about what's going on today. They're concerned about what direction we're headed. And I think as we look ahead, you know, it's the very things you point out that are the reasons why stocks have some potential life in them. Even if the Fed does cause a little more damage than what we're hoping, even if some type of recession is in the cards here near term, well, okay, the market's already looking ahead to how do we get to the other side of that, because it's possible that, at least from an academic perspective, the recession's already here, even if you don't get to declare it the way that, you know, the National Bureau of Economic Research might want to be able to declare it. You know, Art, I think plenty of other stuff to look at this week, some of the economic indicators you talk about. What else is jumping out at you? What else are you talking to clients about?
Well, I think first and foremost is to put this year in the context of a period of years. So for any of our clients who've been with us at least 3 years, they're making money. 5 years, they're making money. 10 years, they're making money. And so this is an aberration this year. Another anomaly with respect to what's going on, you go back and you compare this to the Great Recession. I've talked about this before on the show. We had an economic catastrophe that year. Individuals' balance sheets were being, you know, trashed. Businesses were being trashed. The auto industry was on the ropes. Banks were on the ropes. This time around, nothing's happened, as you guys have suggested. It's the anticipation, as Bob pointed out, of this recession that may happen. We don't know yet. We don't know how deep it's going to go, how long it's going to last, if it's even going to happen. And so that's something. I think the market, again, anticipating something that hasn't happened, sets this time apart. Because if things start falling in a positive direction, for example, the dollar has strengthened recently. So that's going to cause corporate profits to be relatively higher, perhaps, going forward than what the analysts have already anticipated. So I think there's some potential good news, you know, hidden in, you know, the data, but we really don't know what's going to happen next. So I think it's important to be cautious. And Bob, as you pointed out, over the decades we've been doing this, value stocks, you know, hold up better in a sell-off. That wasn't true through 2020. Growth stocks took, you know, did well for 10 years there, but We're in this period of time which growth stocks have been hammered so hard. Yes, they can come back, but we've always talked about having more conservative stocks in your portfolio to help you float better, you know, when the waves are coming over the boat.
And this is a conversation that one of our colleagues, Paige Radke, and I have quite regularly, this idea that, you know, a lot of the old names that you thought of as value look a little different now. It's some of the growth names that have made their way over to the value side of the market. They've got far more consistent earnings than they used to have. And they're names that even in a tough market are going to be a little more defensible. And so I think, you know, the important part of that conversation to me is, yeah, value has some opportunity, but it may not have to be value the same way it used to be. It's a lot of the things that now show up on the growth side of the market that look attractive as well, because the definition has changed a little over the years. You know, Kendall, the one thing that you and I have come back to a couple of times, the one thing that has been thematic of the last few years is just how much change has been forced upon us, just how much opportunity that creates. We had a announcement late last week with kind of a follow-up Monday on something that's kind of near and dear to me, nuclear fusion, this idea that you know, the prospects for energy production in the future are far cleaner, far less costly. And it's one more of those technologies that, as we look at kind of opportunities down the road, I think should make investors happy. You know, maybe not looking for a comment specifically on the nuclear fusion announcement. I think it's a big deal. But just, you know, more broadly speaking, you know, how technological development continues to fuel investment opportunities.
Yeah, I think even in a year like this where you're watching growth and tech stocks get hammered, I think there's reasons to be optimistic looking ahead, not just simply on valuations, but for the exact thing that you talked about. I think, obviously, you know, we talk about the importance of having balance in your portfolio, stock side and bond side, over and over. But for that reason, you know, that you just pointed out, it's why we'll never fully abandon or we'll never shift all from growth to value or vice versa, because there's still plenty of opportunities. It's one of the great things about this country, this economy, and innovation that we continue to see, you know, on and on.
You know, I think we talk at length about opportunity. We talk at length about, you know, kind of the reasons why you're an investor. You're an investor because you want to participate in the next great idea. You're an investor because you want to benefit from the earnings that can generate. And I think, you know, the one thing that continues to come back for us as investors is, yeah, there's always risks out there. There's always these things we don't anticipate. And yet, some of those things we don't anticipate turn out to be things that are pretty profitable for investors, turn out to be opportunities that maybe we didn't see coming. So, yeah, I think I'm fully on board with your idea, Kendall, that, you know, the reason for balance is to participate, not just, you know, on the things we know are coming, but on some of that stuff that maybe we didn't quite anticipate.
You take a look at market leadership. It takes a lot to knock leadership off of the leaderboard. The trend is your friend. And the simple point is growth stocks have, you know, pretty much the wind at their backs at this point in the cycle. And I think it's important, you know, to remember, you know, growth stocks have fairly large earnings. And there's just two components that drive stock prices, folks. It's interest rates and earnings. So when you look at the stocks that are populated in the value space, insurance companies, banks, utilities, oil and gas, that covers most of it, right? Healthcare would be a fifth. You know, there are limits to their earnings. And on the way down, they'll hold up pretty well because they're consistent, steady, reliable earnings that are capable of some growth. But on the growth side of the equation, you know, there's a reason why you're being asked to pay above average PE ratios to make investments in that sector, because they have strong growth of earnings. And it's not a matter of either or. You want both in your account. This year typifies that. If you needed more than just your bond money to get at, you're going to be thrilled that you had some value money that held up relatively well. You know, I think for most of the listeners of this podcast, it's important to put all this into a time frame that if this is, in fact, an average bear market, means everybody gets made whole by the end of next year. So the average bear market is 23 months from peak to trough back to prior peak. This feels to me like your average bear market, caused differently, of course, because of the pandemic and the world's factories being shut down spring and summer of 2020 at a time when demand for durable goods shot up 18%. Something's got to give, which, of course, was price. But bottlenecks in the supply chain are slowly being resolved. Of course, China reopening and backing off of their zero COVID policy is going to have a huge impact on alleviating the problems in the supply chain. And now it's just a function of, dealing with the Fed. Jay Powell's got a hard job, because he can't even let on that inflation's coming down, because that would indicate that he's okay with it and everything's fine. He's not going to raise rates anymore and the markets would get clobbered. He's got a tough job, so he can't even cut us some slack. He's got to raise rates and say, I'm going to just keep doing this until inflation comes down, without hardly even acknowledging that he's starting to win the war. And as it becomes more obvious, into the wintertime, maybe even early spring, that, yeah, he's in fact winning the war. Inflation is going to keep coming down. Rents are starting to come down now. It's hardly showing up in the CPI numbers. Gas prices are coming down. They say regular gas is going to be under $3 a gallon here coming up. That's hardly showing up in the CPI numbers. So you've got something, used car prices are going down now, so that's hardly showing up in the CPI numbers. So, you chart all this out over the next 3 or 4 months, I think all day long it's clear that inflation's going down, in spite of the fact that Jay Powell can't acknowledge that. So that's what caused, in my opinion, the markets to get clobbered here, middle to the end of the week, because of that, the fear that rates could go even higher. But I think it'll be pretty obvious February, March into April that inflation will come down, the Fed can start backing off, and we get back to putting the pencil to, really what is an accurate number for present value of future cash. That's all you get when you buy a stock, let alone when rates start going down late this next year or maybe early into 2024. So I'm encouraged by what I see, and yeah, I'm pretty upbeat for next year.
Well, thank you for those comments, Bob. Kendallard, thanks for joining us. Max, thank you for the reminder that Quick Trip is open Christmas Eve. Hopefully, I'll be ahead of my game here and get that taken care of a little earlier next week. But as always, we enjoy doing the program for you. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.